Emmy Award-winning comedian John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that will stream live on Netflix during the Netflix Is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A. debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time only on Netflix. What's up, everybody? That's right. I sit on 2 pillows. That's something only you know about. I don't care. Nothing wrong with being short. The only thing that's wrong with being short is caring about being short. If you stop caring about being short, the only problem goes away, other than the high things. Welcome to Love It or Leave It. It's the last week before Beyonce's new country album drops, so get your horse orders in before the end of the week if you want to beat the rush. Minnie Driver joins us to answer the big questions. Darcy Carden helps us search her IMDb. Jenny Yang is here to remind us how far we haven't come. We also figure out how to save you a little daylight savings time. Plus, Rabbi Sharon Brous is here. My rabbi. And so this is just going to be very personal. Let's get into it. What a week. On Tuesday, President Biden headed to a campaign stop in Las Vegas where he laid out his economic agenda, including $258 billion in housing investments. Said Biden, wiping flop sweat off his brow, it would have been closer to $300 billion, but that blackjack table was calling my name. I remember when I bought my first home, said Biden. I ran those horses till they nearly keeled over, but I got every one of those stakes in the ground. If anyone tells you the McGraw clan got there first before they mysteriously disappeared, you tell them that's McGraw clan propaganda. That's Biden land. From the turn outside Beckham all the way to the Southern Pass, I'd sooner give it back to the Chickasaw than let those filthy McGraw bastards anywhere near my land. Biden concluded to a stunned silence while holding an ice cream cone. The money Biden announced would go towards mortgage relief credits, down payments to help first-generation homeowners, lower closing costs, and encouraging competition in the housing market. And for those who live on the coasts, some of the most delicious avocado toast you'd ever did see. Ooh, a poached egg, a little sea salt. Now that's living. Not living in a house, but living. In some sense of the word. Meanwhile, the Biden administration on Wednesday issued its most significant climate regulation yet, an EPA rule to accelerate our national transition to electric cars. Here's how it works. Going forward, non-electric cars can still have cup holders, but the cup holders will just be a little too small. Just barely. So that at first you're like, huh. This McDonald's cup is unusually big, I guess. But then you realize it's every cup. No cup fits. You have to wedge the cup between your thighs, and it shouldn't be as annoying as it is. It certainly shouldn't be the thing that convinces you to get a whole new zero-emission car, but it is. The cup holders are just a hair too small, and that's how we solve climate change. Nice. By 2032, the rule, which tightens rules on tailpipe pollution over time, would likely mean over half of new cars sold in the U.S. would be electric, and we would avoid pumping 7 billion tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere over the next 30 years. Unless Taylor Swift announces a new tour. It's like how after 2016, there was a certain amount of time before you could joke about Hillary. We're still, for some reason, in that phase with Taylor Swift. President Biden was spotted wearing black Hoka running shoes with his suit. And the aging conservative white male fashion police of the New York Post have informed readers that this is bad and a cause for concern. If we're going to be concerned about this, it should be about President Biden falling into his streetwear era. It's a slippery slope. Before you know it, the commander-in-chief is wearing a Supreme bucket hat and an off-white belt bag to a state dinner. I have to tell you something. I'm glad to see he's in sneakers. Dress shoes are fucking stupid. Every sneaker brand should make the most comfortable walk-on pillows, 2 inches of cushion, running sneakers that are meant to be worn with suits. What are we doing here? Oh, we have the shoes that we could wear and walk around in all day without a cramp or twinge of pain that we love to wear, and then we have our business shoes that are just worse, but they convey business. When you go to the airport, they have a sign that tells you not to yell at strangers. We have to ring up our own groceries at the grocery store. There's only one rhino left. It's over. I'm wearing my Brooks Ghost Max to weddings and bar mitzvahs. Speaking of Jewish performances of manhood, Florida Democrat Jared Moskowitz this week called House Republicans bluff in their impeachment inquiry into President Biden, daring House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer to call for a vote. Moskowitz said this at Wednesday's impeachment hearing.
Let's just do the impeachment. I mean, why continue to waste millions of dollars of the taxpayers' money if we're going to impeach because you believe you've shown he's committed a high crime and misdemeanor? What are you waiting on?
I like his energy here. Like when you've been texting with someone from an app for a while and they keep saying they want to meet up, but it's been weeks now and you're clearly never going to meet. And finally, you're just like, how about right now? Let's get Hailey Bieber smoothies right now. What's wrong with right now? Meet me in Erewhon in 15 minutes if you're so interested. Right now. Let's go. And then they block you. And you finally know peace. Moskowitz even offered to help get the vote started.
They haven't proven it, right? They haven't proven he committed a high crime and misdemeanor. Otherwise, we would call for impeachment. So I just, look, you know, the chairman knows me well. I mean, I'm just here to help him, right? And so I just think we should do it today. Let's just call for it. I'll make the motion, Mr. Chairman. I want to help you out. You can second it, right? Like, make the motion to impeach President Biden. Go ahead. It's your turn. You second it. No, nothing. Okay, we got nothing.
Fantastic. You ever watch someone and you agree with them? And everything they're saying, but you also know they got dunked in the toilet in high school. And really, aren't I just talking about myself right now? And isn't that what bothers me? Am I Jared Moskowitz? What could have led me there, and what could have led him here? Oh. Fucked me up today. We would be remiss not to mention that Moskowitz, doing heroic work up there, also put on a Putin mask to attend the hearing.
I just came to thank James Comer for taking all of our intelligence and using it in the committee.
Then to really sell the impression, he poisoned several journalists. As Republicans were on defense over their flagging effort to impeach Joe Biden, Donald Trump made headlines over his embrace of a national abortion ban. In a Tuesday radio interview, he said that he could be on board for a 15-week ban.
We're going to come up with a time, and maybe we can bring the country together on that issue. The number of weeks now, people are agreeing on 15, and I'm thinking in terms of that, and it'll come out to something that's very reasonable. But people are really, even hardliners are agreeing, seems to be 15 weeks, seems to be a number that people are agreeing at.
Oh, yeah, the hardliners love it. Gloria Steinem was shaking hands with Mike Johnson. Merle Hoffman was clinking champagne glasses with Tim Scott. Pretty soon, everybody was making out, and the deal was done. And Trump's charm offensive continued when he sued George Stephanopoulos, also known as George Sloppanopoulos, which didn't mean anything, but was good, for defamation over the host's on-air claim that judges and two separate juries have found Trump liable for rape. In fact, Trump was found liable for sexual abuse. Trump wants everyone to be very clear about this. He was found liable for sexual abuse. If you don't want Trump's lawyers to come after you, be sure to spread the word. He is a sexual abuser who was found liable for doing abuse of a sexual nature. Speaking of consequences, if Trump does not post a nearly half a billion dollar bond on Monday, New York Attorney General Letitia James, the legend who doesn't have a political bone in her body, may begin seizing Trump's assets, including Trump Tower. Trump, it seems, cannot raise that bond, leaving him with dwindling options, which include filing for bankruptcy, finding a wealthy backer, hoping an appeals court reduces the bond, or doing nothing and letting her take the building. In a week, this could be Trump Tower. For those listening, here are some of the new services on offer at Gay Tower. Free abortions, paper straw factory. There's also a sign that says, "Become trans today." The Ibram X. Kendi Center for the Study of Why White People Should Feel Bad All the Time. And a Sweet Green. I don't like Sweet Green. Not enough dressing. It's like, we get it. You're healthy. Calm down. You know what I mean? I'm here for a salad. I want to live a long time, but not forever. There was a story about how like Sweet Green has never been profitable, and there's all these plans for like to get rid of the fucking employees and replace them with robots. And it's like, hey, CFO, make the dressing cups a little bit bigger so people have a bright fucking day. I'm actually not a comeuppance guy. It's weird. Based on my personality, you'd sort of think I would be. Like, I know I read as a petty bitch. But I truly have never really cared what happens to Trump. I just want Trump to stop happening to us. But I'm a full resistance lib when it comes to taking that building. I don't care about the politics. Just take that fucking building. And honestly, the type A nerds from coast to coast who've been paying attention nonstop for the better part of a decade, we deserve this. We deserve to see a gold toilet being carried out of that building and turned into a succulent planter at a lesbian-owned coffee shop / pit bull rescue center / dildo repair co-op. Could you imagine it? And it's not just Trump who's on the hook for various crimes. Former Trump aide Peter Navarro this week began serving his 4-month prison sentence for refusing to comply with a congressional subpoena. Navarro has been advised to build up his reputation in prison on day one by singling out the worst person there, walking right up to him and saying, "I'd like to offer you foreign policy advice regarding China." The prison where Navarro will serve his term is next to Miami's zoo. Sam Mangel, the prison consultant Navarro hired to help him prepare, told CNN, "Not only can you hear the lions, you can hear the lions roar every morning." Stop making it sound cool. In the days leading up to the primary, the AP reported that someone with access to Moreno's email had, in 2008, created a profile on Adult Friend Finder seeking men for one-on-one sex. "Oh, that's where I know him from. I knew he looked familiar," said Lindsey Graham. The photoless user, Nardo19672, which happens to be Moreno's birth year and month, wrote, "Hi, looking for young guys to have fun with while traveling. Bernard, or Bernie, or Nardo, if you're a young guy up for some fun," denied that he created the account. Through a lawyer, Moreno claimed it was an ill-conceived prank by a former intern.
"What's the joke exactly? Is that the joke? So what's the joke? Then what's the joke?"
Moreno's lawyer even provided a statement by the former intern, a man named Dan Ricci, who said, "I am thoroughly embarrassed by an aborted prank I pulled on my friend and former boss, Bernie Moreno, nearly 2 decades ago." 16 years. Calm down. 2 decades ago. Okay. The prank being that Moreno was actually more interested in groove stuff. Classic intern stuff. You know how people with no job security are always going on to fucking gay sex websites, joke soliciting gay sex on their boss's behalf? That story didn't convince everyone, including one Trump ally who told a reporter, "If you believe Bernie Moreno's story that in 2008, a rogue intern from Ohio University created a gay dating account for Bernie right next to Bernie's parents' house in Florida, I've got some oceanfront property in Ohio to sell you." "And we'll buy it," screamed a retired contractor at a Trump rally outside Phoenix as his wife ran to get her checkbook from their Dodge Durango, which seats 7 but has never carried more than 2 of them because their son doesn't visit anymore because his wife has gone crazy with the politics. Just a reminder. Bernie Moreno is a right-wing sleaze. He is for a national abortion ban. He was for a trans healthcare ban that the Republican governor of Ohio vetoed for being too extreme. He has fully embraced Trump. Sherrod Brown is one of the best senators you could ever hope to have. He is the last statewide Democrat serving in Ohio, and he has managed to stay in office without selling out his principles, and we all need to do everything we can to keep him in office. If you go to votesaveamerica.com, you can donate to our Senate fund, and if you volunteer, you may even find some young guys to have fun with while traveling. During an interview at Harvard earlier this month, Trump's son-in-law and Gumby's evil human twin, Jared Kushner, said this.
"Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up livelihoods. You think about all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and into all the munitions. If that would have gone into education or innovation, what could have been done?" And so I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up.
What a sick fuck. It's a plan Kushner has taken to calling from the river to the Airbnb. Remember when Kushner said he could solve the Middle East because he had read 25 books about it? I think I can speak for almost everyone when I say that I would like to see Jared hit over the head by these books. One by one. It won't solve anything, but it's something. Where would those Palestinians go, you ask? No worries. Jared has a plan, and it's to bulldoze something in the Negev and dump Gaza's civilians there. Anyway, fun fact about Jared Kushner, the New York Times reported in 2017 that when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was visiting New York back in the 90s, he would stay at the Kushner's home and sleep in the teenage Jared's bedroom while Jared slept in the basement. So you'd think Kushner would have some sympathy for people who are sick of having their homes taken over by right-wing Israelis. But somehow, no. Truly just a dumb fucking monster. Last week, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called for new elections in Israel, saying Netanyahu had lost his way. Netanyahu forcefully rejected the claim, saying, "I've always been evil." So on Wednesday, Netanyahu railed against Schumer in a remote closed-door meeting with Senate Republicans, accusing him of interfering with another country's politics by interfering with another country's politics. On Thursday, House Speaker Mike Johnson said he'd be absolutely thrilled to have Benjamin Netanyahu come speak directly to Congress.
I would love to have him come and address a joint session of Congress. We'll certainly extend that invitation.
Continued Johnson, "We'll make sure to have something here he can eat, a nice box of matzah, some of those fish blobs, a brisket. Am I pronouncing that right? Brisket?" Added Johnson, turning to an aide, "He speaks English, right? The whole thing won't be in Jewish or whatever." Though it was hard to hear Johnson over the sound of his church's patented Spot a Jew app blowing up in his pants pocket. Meanwhile, as Republicans jockey for the approval of Israel's right-wing leader, 2.2 million people in Gaza are at risk of famine. 70% of northern Gaza is already starving. And while the UN says they have enough aid near the Gaza border, they cannot get it to those in need because of the inspection process by Israel, the destruction of roads inside Gaza, and the ongoing fighting. The only way to get food and aid to those in need is through a ceasefire. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said that the United States had submitted a draft resolution to the UN calling for an immediate ceasefire that would be tied to the release of hostages held by Hamas. "That's good news, but I wish the draft didn't end with 'no worries if not, LOL.'" When asked how the United States could effectively push Israel towards a ceasefire while both supporting them financially and vetoing every UN resolution that asks for a ceasefire, Blinken replied that the new resolution asks for an immediate ceasefire tied to the release of hostages, and we very much hope that countries will support that. Blinken also affirmed that the U.S. will continue to support Israel and its right to defend itself to make sure that October 7th never happens again. But at the same time, it's imperative that the civilians who are in harm's way and who are suffering so terribly, that we focus on them, that we make them a priority, protecting the civilians, getting them humanitarian assistance. If only we had some way of leveraging the vast amount of money and supplies we send to Israel's military, some way to tie our support of this country to what we believe is not only morally necessary, but also in Israel's best interest. Why are we always beseeching? George H.W. Bush put conditions on aid for Israel, and he wasn't some lib. He used to run the CIA. You make a joke about this. The Supreme Court on Tuesday gave Texas a temporary green light to enforce its new immigration law that allows local police to arrest people suspected of crossing the border illegally. But don't worry, law enforcement needs to have a compelling reason to suspect them. Something like "speak Spanish" or "looks like they might speak Spanish." As of today, the law is back on hold after the Supreme Court returned the case to the Fifth Circuit, which had previously blocked a lower court ruling blocking the law, but now blocked the law itself while scheduling arguments. If you're confused, don't worry. A local cop in Amarillo, Texas, will surely handle this legal morass deftly. The law was in effect for just hours, giving local law enforcement blue balls, which, interestingly enough, is what we'll all have to show at the border to cross into Mike Johnson's America. Speaking of flooded borders, more than 150 of Washington, D.C.'s famed cherry blossom trees will be chopped down later this spring in order to build higher seawalls around the tidal basin. Said a young George Washington, "I cannot tell a lie. We need to build higher seawalls around the tidal basin." The land around the basin has sunk 5 feet over the last century, and climate change has caused the water level to rise by more than a foot. As a result, sections of the walkway now flood every day at high tide. But it's been beautiful to see how the tourists band together and help each other keep their iPads above water until the daily helicopter arrives. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey on Wednesday signed a bill into law that bans diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at public schools and universities. The law also requires public universities to designate restrooms on the basis of biological sex, defined by Alabama law as the physical condition of being male or female as stated on the individual's original birth certificate. "And with that, we've solved our state's last two problems," said the governor of the state, ranked 40th in crime, 44th in education, 44th in healthcare, and 47th for its environment. The Justice Department sued Apple on Thursday, joining 16 states in Washington, D.C., in an antitrust lawsuit that accuses the company of building and maintaining a smartphone monopoly, finally answering the age-old question, who Apple watches the Apple Watchers? Come on back. The government outlined a number of what it believes are anti-competitive practices, like blocking other companies from offering apps to compete with Apple Wallet and making other Apple products easier to connect to iPhones rather than rival smartphones. But here's what's interesting. If you read the lawsuit while wearing an Apple Vision Pro, it's like you're reading it on the moon. The suit also argues that Apple undermines the ability of iPhone owners to text with Android owners using green bubbles to signal the inferiority of other smartphones. But as anyone who's ever bullied an Android user knows, the Samsung freaks undermine themselves. Oh, tell me more about your 40 camera lenses. I'll be over here airdropping a screenshot of a meme to a selection of strangers. It's called networking. On Tuesday, Beyoncé posted that her forthcoming album, Cowboy Carter, was born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed. And it was very clear that I wasn't. I see Beyoncé also attended Cool Devin's bar mitzvah that his parents made him invite the whole class to. I've always said that Beyoncé and I were a lot alike, two hot, astonishingly talented outcasts. Shut up. Fans believe Beyoncé was referring to her performance of Daddy Lessons with the Chicks at the 2016 Country Music Awards, which drew backlash even before she hit the stage. That happened on November 2nd, 2016, though. So I understand if your memory of the 2016 Country Music Awards has been obliterated by what happened 6 days later. That's what happened to me. I was like, oh my God. Remember that? There was a whole controversy, and then gone it went. And finally, wildlife conservationists in Southwest Florida found a record 11 Burmese pythons in a single day last month. Even better, they were all having sex with each other. The pythons were found in three separate mating balls, each of which contained one female snake and a pile of male snakes. Python, more like pie fuckathon. Thank you, Chris. Don't let the name mating ball fool you. It's just a heap of snakes, not a sphere. They call it a mating ball because the snakes are having a ball, fucking and sucking each other. Up next, we're unearthing outdated relics with Jenny Yang.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna. To keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale. Even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch. When it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
The constant political chaos can be a lot. You gotta mix it up with a little regular chaos. Go behind the pods with Terminally Online, Cricket's loosest show, where the news takes a backseat to the unscripted antics of your favorite Pod Save America and Cricket Media hosts and staffers. Hear Love It, learning about dating apps.
I was single in my 20s, and then yada, 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 I was single in my 40s.
Listen to my sage advice on being kind to retail workers. Just smile, walk away. You don't have a right to be an asshole. And enjoy Tommy celebrating the unrelenting wheel of time.
Time comes for all of us. You will all be out of touch with the culture. You'll all be asking someone what some equivalent of a Yassified means.
Terminally Online is a subscriber-exclusive show. To get access, subscribe to our Friends of the Pod community at cricket.com/friends.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
And we're back! Tonight, we welcome a tremendous comedian, Jenny Yang, back to the Love It or Leave It stage. Most people know Jenny as a fantastic stand-up, but some might not be aware that she's also an archaeologist of the very, very recent past. Please put your hands together and welcome Dr. Yang to the stage for a very important segment we're calling The 90s Are Ancient History. Welcome to the stage, Dr. Jenny Yang.
Where do I sit, John?
Here's great.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you, John. Though I never said I was a doctor. We've made such incredible strides as a society since the 1990s. Mm-hmm. For example, the invention of new and revolutionary anti-obesity medications. This week, Oprah Winfrey released a special titled an Oprah Special, Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution, in which she discusses using medications like Ozempic, Mounjaro, and Wegovy. People have a lot of mixed feelings about Turnpage using weight loss injections, at least in part because they are so new. You know what's not new?
What?
This TV Guide cover from October 1990 I found as a part of my research. Oh, what the fuck is this? For listeners at home, this is a TV Guide cover with a photo of Oprah Winfrey, who looks great, by the way, calling her bumpy, lumpy, and downright dumpy. On the cover of TV Guide? I'm sorry, I didn't realize they had magazines in the Stone Age. How dare you? Children saw this cover, people. Fat children, and they're the cutest ones. Truly a blind read.
I just...
Incredible.
In 1990, they put a picture of Oprah on TV Guide. This is just where you would go to find out what time things were. This was just a list of things and what time they were on. They're like, you need to know, Oprah's fucking bumpy, lumpy, and dumpy and frumpy.
This is what we saw at the supermarket checkout line, isn't it?
That is absolutely
at eye level, isn't it? I had this accent approved by Minnie Driver in the back. Just FYI.
I'm sure she was being nice.
Excuse me, I am a trained archaeologist.
Thank you, Jenny. Up next, it's Minnie Driver. And we're back. If you're here for the Tiny Chauffeur Convention, that's actually tomorrow night. But since you've already got through the monologue, help us welcome to stage the incredible Minnie Driver. Thank you for being here. Hi. Thank you so much. It's so nice of you to join us. Recently, yes. You were on the Jennifer Hudson Show and shared the advice you would give your 25-year-old self after getting dumped by Matt Damon.
Mm. What did I say? What she would tell her 25-year-old self after Matt... Oh, Christ, what did I say? It was under duress. Look, I look like a hostage.
You look stunning. Honestly, you look fantastic.
I look good because of it takes a lot of people and a ton of makeup to look that good. Now, but what did I tell myself?
I don't know.
Don't remember. You joke. This was what did I tell myself? I think I said what my father said to me, which is essentially, maybe I didn't say this, but this is what I should have said. Don't worry about it, because it will happen again. He was like, the best thing I can tell you is that you will feel this way about somebody else. And I remember thinking it was so cruel, but it was absolutely true. And it's very good advice. But that's not what I said on the Jennifer Hudson show. I'm so sorry. I can't remember what it was.
Well, it's better to have the good advice then.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I'm glad we got the good advice.
You got the good advice. I think it was probably something comforting.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Olivia Rodrigo has that song, Driver's License. And it's about sort of a breakup. Mm-hmm. But it's like a high school breakup. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this doesn't matter. It's like, I know it feels like big emotions, but you're in high school. Don't worry about it. Who cares?
That's exactly it. It'll be fine.
Like, imagine if, like, you actually, you know, it's like, it's a high school guy. He sucks. He's a little dum-dum. That's not the love of your life.
No, exactly. But you can't hear that when you're a teenager. And by the way, that's also the venerable Taylor Swift's, you know, entire canon up until a certain point is... she makes a good point that she was on the bleachers, whatever it was. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, something about the bleachers.
Something about the bleachers.
Someone's on the bleachers. Something that rhymes with bleachers.
What rhymes with bleachers?
She's on the features. Teachers. Beaches. She's on the bleachers. I'm wearing hats. I don't think that's it. Now, are there any good songs about having absolutely zero romantic experience in high school? Because that's the song you really need. That's a song I think a lot of kids need to hear.
What rhymes with I'm not getting any?
Like Olivia Rodrigo sings a song about having a breakup. What about all the kids are like, you're just bragging about having had a boyfriend.
It's so true. Actually, that's really true. It's like the way that when people say that they've been reincarnated and that they remember their past lives, and like they're always like a high priestess, and it's like, well, somebody had to be the serving person. Like it was like, yeah. I want to hear
can't,
that
everyone
story.
Can't have been Joan of Arc.
No, of course they weren't. Like, you were the person cleaning up after the pharaoh's family had left 3 weeks later.
Right
I mean, you particularly.
No, for sure I always struggle with the meaning of reincarnation, because if you don't remember it and it has no, it's like, what kind of punishment is that? Your new movie.
Yes, I will. I'll explain the movie to you, because it's so, I didn't know enough about this. I mean, I was very young. You probably weren't even born when this was happening. 1981, when were you born?
I was born in 1982.
So the year before you were born, everyone was really, really against what was happening in South Africa. And the world, I love that I'm telling all of you this, but like, because I'm sure lots of you remember this. But the South African rugby tour was not welcome anywhere in the world, but New Zealand welcomed them. And it's the national game of New Zealand. And there were huge riots because the Maori people and lots of white New Zealanders felt that they should stand with the Black South Africans and show solidarity. And there were huge protests and really violent for a very, very peaceful country. And this is the backdrop of this film, of a boy who is a Maori boy with a white mother and his brother, who are sort of trying to find their way in this complicated moment. And it is really funny and really beautiful, and somehow manages to educate without proselytizing. That is very hard to say with aligners in, I'm not going to lie. It isn't pompous or self-righteous. It is beautiful, and it teaches whilst also making you laugh and making you feel. And I really encourage you to go and see it.
All right.
There you
are. I'll go see it. You also have a podcast.
I do.
Mini Questions with Mini Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite guest?
You haven't been on yet.
That's what my follow-up question was.
Yay.
That was my follow-up question.
I tell you what, it was quite... Tony Blair came on my podcast. And I got to tell you, like, that dude is charismatic.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, no matter what you think about Iraq, that man is charismatic and amazing and brilliant. And I felt like I learned. I felt like I got... you know, these States people, they have proper charisma.
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them don't.
Some of them really don't.
But the ones that do, it's like, oh, wow.
You get it, like rock stars.
Yeah.
Like Taylor Swift. Tony Blair's like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I feel like Bill Clinton and Tony Blair sniffed each other the way two golden doodles know that they're both talking to golden doodles. You know what I mean? Like, they like know that they're not just dogs, but even more the same.
You are sublime. No, you are.
I think that's right.
No, you.
Now, on your podcast, Mini Questions with Mini Driver, you ask all of your guests the same set of questions, which you derive from a famous series of interview questions developed by the French writer Marcel Proust. This is America. So the following queries were developed by my staff on their iPhones while walking my dog. Are you ready for Mini and Maxi Questions with Mini Driver?
Oh, boy. Yeah, oh, no.
Oh, there's me.
Okay,
there you are.
Oh,
the Riddler. You're the Riddler.
Oh my God,
I think that's awful.
Why am I like that? What? Who did that to me?
Yeah, who did that? Who did that to Mini Driver? Was it Zuri?
By the way, it's very current. Terrifying. Tell me
all
to
right.
Riddler.
First question.
Yeah,
what happens when you die?
Oh God. Lights out.
Okay. Do you ever feel like maybe you're wiping wrong and then maybe you've been wiping wrong this whole time, but it's too late to ask anyone, so you just have to do what you can do and hope for the best?
No.
Yeah, me neither. What a stupid question. What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done on a date?
Like climbed out a window.
Wow.
Yeah.
From inside to outside or outside to inside?
No, from the restaurant I went. It's embarrassing / awful. He was a terrible person, and that by after we'd finished sharing an avocado, it was England in the 90s, you know, like that was an appetizer. Half an avocado with a bit of balsamic vinegar. It was very au courant then. I digress.
That was what England was doing in the 90s.
It took a minute for us to get up to speed with the whole cuisine thing.
Yeah.
I digress. This guy revealed himself to be not only a bigot, but so monumentally boring. He wasn't even interesting in his awfulness. He was just boring. And he was really good looking, which is how I'd been suckered in the first place. So I did. I skipped down through the window. But a girl did catch me, which is why I was thinking it was embarrassing. And she was like, are you just going to leave him? And I was like, yes.
Do you really have to rinse off your recycling before you put it in the recycling bin? Or as you call it across the pond?
In England.
Crisps.
Oh my God.
Do you have to rinse it?
Yes. And also dry it.
No.
Yes.
The recycling?
Yes.
Nobody's doing that. It's all going to one hole.
But by the way, well, we all know that's true, but still in England, the national psychology is that you rinse it, you dry it, and then you put it in the recycling with the best hopes that they will, you know, someone will sit there sorting it through and sending it off to become yoga mats. That's what I think anyway.
If a werewolf bit a zombie, would the zombie become a werewolf? Would the werewolf become a zombie or both?
Both.
Both.
I would watch that movie. By the way, we're in the right town. I think we might have just written a film.
Zombie werewolf. Werewolf zombie.
Yeah. Zombie werewolf. That's it.
People get two things. That happens all the time.
By the way, okay, we'll just say it's Gilded Age meets...
What's it going to meet? A werewolf.
Twilight.
It's going to meet a werewolf. It's going to meet a fucking werewolf. Werewolf zombie. You heard it here first.
Honestly, let's put it into ChatGPT and see what happens. Someone's going to do that now, aren't they? Go on. That's a great idea for a film.
Yeah. It is a good idea. Wow. Nobody tell anybody. That's our idea. That's our idea. Do you have any questions for me?
I do, because it's one of the questions that I ask on my podcast that I very much like. And someone said today, maybe my favorite answer to it ever. So the question is, what question would you most like answered? And people, it's hard to say generally, but people give very interesting answers about lots of different things, about what happens when you die and about aliens and about some geopolitical stuff. And this person today on my podcast said, I want to know if anyone actually really enjoys reverse cowgirl. And I was so... It made me laugh so hard, but there's this dead silence. And I said to the producers afterwards, like, you better keep all that dead air in because it's so funny. I was sort of so like British, like, woo, goodness. Like my British mechanics literally blew a gasket inside my head and I couldn't speak. And then I laughed and was like, what? Answers on a postcard, please. Like, I'm hoping people will write in someone who does enjoy it.
What's crazy is that was also my question. Because I actually want to know if it is fun to ride a horse backwards.
I think it would be very fun to ride a horse backwards. But not so fun. It did end up being that reverse cowgirl is uncomfortable because particularly after a certain age, you'd have all sorts of chiropractic issues, constantly looking back over your shoulder to see if they're enjoying it. Ow! Oh, God! Oh, and all the bouncing.
Well, you
got
You just put your phone in selfie. You put your phone in selfie mode.
The whole, I'm going to leave. I think we just have to leave it to the kids to also figure out that it's deeply uncomfortable and not that fun.
And that's so important. Mini Driver, everybody. Uproar is out now, and you can download season 3 of Mini Questions with Mini Driver wherever you get your podcasts. Up next, I sit down with Rabbi Sharon Brous.
Hooray!
Please welcome Dr. Yang to the stage. Now, Dr. Yang.
Yes?
Now, this is not the only artifact you've helped uncover.
Oh, that's right. Oh, the 90s! The 90s are ancient history. Thank you, John. Okay, I don't know. Did I just do it
We're
right?
just doing them all.
Oh, okay, great. Hello! I'm back! I make choices. I'm an actor.
Yeah, and you're doing amazing.
Thank
you're
you.
Amazing. Now, what you have? I understand you have another artifact for us.
Oh, that is right. Again, I never said I was a doctor. This week, 90s exercise Richard Simmons popped back up on Twitter with a poignant, if awkwardly worded, tweet thread on living the moment, which then led to this headline. Richard Simmons apologizes for confusion caused by his message about death. Quote, I am not dying. Oh, dear. Richard Simmons. Oh, oh. Well, which is awesome. I, for one, was thrilled to hear that Richard Simmons isn't dying. You know what I wasn't thrilled about? This clip of David Letterman interviewing Richard Simmons on The Late Show.
Richard. Now, boy, look at the sheen on those thighs. Wow. Man alive. Now, oh!
Remember when people couldn't handle one single solitary gay guy? Oh, if seeing Richard Simmons shocked you when this aired, your eyeballs must be melting down your face in 2024. I feel like we've evolved into a different species since then, and I refuse to go back. I refuse.
You refuse? And when is this from? This must be from the 1990s?
No, wait a second. I'm sorry. I got the carbon dating wrong. This clip is from 2007. The 2000s are ancient history. Thank you, John.
Please welcome to the stage the author of The Amen Effect. It's Rabbi Sharon Brous. Hi. Thank you for being here.
Hi, everyone. Hi, John.
All right. A Jewish castaway washes up on a remote, uncharted island. And to his surprise, there's another Jewish castaway who's already there. Here, let me show you around, says the old castaway to the new castaway. He points at various rocks and trees and says, this is the butcher, this is the florist, this is the synagogue, this is the baker, this is the tailor, this is the other synagogue, this is the cobbler. Wait, interrupts the new castaway. Surely for one man on an island, you don't need two synagogues. Yeah, but this is the one we don't go to. Rabbi. You talk in the book about a crisis of loneliness and isolation. You also talk about the way organized religion has failed to answer that crisis, that often people are forced to choose between religion that's extreme and cruel on one hand, or religion that's routine and a bit detached on the other, sort of crazy or boring. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what you view as the cost of that failure and the ways you think we should address it?
Well, wow, thank you. I'm glad you're not asking me about the reverse cowgirl thing from Mindy. The way that's a relief. I do have an answer to the zombie and werewolf question, though, okay. By the way, for later. So here's the thing. Human beings have fundamental spiritual needs. We have a need to connect to each other. We are relational beings, and we have a need to connect beyond ourselves also, maybe to something greater than any of us. And when religious institutions and religion generally fails to address those needs because it's either deadly, meaning extreme, regressive, cruel, or already dead, meaning routine and boring and cowardly. So then there's this whole world of human need that's not being addressed by faith communities. And so I think the challenge really is to do the work of sacred excavation and to figure out these traditions that have survived for thousands of years. It's not for nothing. There's incredible wisdom there. And if we can translate some of these ancient ideas about the human condition, about what we should aspire to in the world, then we can actually use some really powerful, very old tools to help address some of the greatest problems facing us as human beings today.
One thing that I've just noticed as I'm getting older is I see that when people form couples or families, especially families, a lot of just the having of kids creates community, whether it's in the school. I think a lot of Jewish parents rediscover that they want their kids to be Jewish and sort of the bar mitzvah is, you know, it's an old joke, right? That kids go to temple until their bar mitzvah, then they don't show up again until their kids have to be bar mitzvahed. And then I do see that, like, just in my own experience that when there are, we have this problem of young men, but also older men who just have no one, they have fewer friends. I see it in my own life, even as I get older, that like that women on their own, they're just better. And so they are better at seeking these things out, of being emotionally connected, of knowing, of being aware a little bit more of their own needs, of other people's needs. So much of what we have to do right now is figure out how to talk to the men that are trying to find meaning in Joe Rogan, trying to find meaning in right-wing politics, trying to find meaning in Jordan Peterson. How do you think about reaching the kind of people that aren't, that don't realize that what they're missing, what they could benefit from, is a kind of community that isn't speaking to their worst impulses?
It's so interesting because I think about that need for belonging, and a lot of people are finding it in these kind of, you know, these dark corners of the internet. They're finding other people who can sort of share their sense of loneliness and detachment and their sense of rejection from the world. And so what we have to do is create environments where people feel that they can belong and have a different kind of dream of, you know, what that shared purpose could look like, but not in a place that will cause harm to other people and not in a fantasy that will cause harm to other people. I was just with this professor, David Williams from Harvard recently, and he said that the studies actually show, he's a data guy, and he said the studies actually show that people who go to church or synagogue or mosque once a week, they will live 7.5 years longer. And for Black Americans who go once a week, they will live 13 years longer if they engage in this kind of rhythmic encounter with community. And so the idea is like to actually build and then to engage ourselves in these kind of spaces that allow us to find meaning, to find purpose, and to feel a sense of belonging so that we don't seek it out elsewhere.
So I wanted to talk to you about Israel. You've for a long time spoken out against Israel's occupation of Gaza and the West Bank. You've talked about how we are called upon to tell the truth, to not look away, especially for those of us who are raised to believe in the project of Israel. Right now, half the population of Gaza is on the brink of starvation. It is on top of tens of thousands of people who have died as a result of the war that Hamas launched on October 7th, but that Israel has conducted with a disregard for Palestinian life, including children, that is indefensible, even if you believe Israel has a right to defend itself. What does it mean to you right now not to look away?
So it means we have to be big-hearted enough that we can actually hold multiple things at once. One is that Israel was attacked in horrific atrocities, the worst since the Holocaust on October 7th. And that's just true, and that's a fact. And some of the most painful parts of the last 5 months for many people is witnessing the denial and the justification and even the celebration of those atrocities by people who say that they care about human rights and human dignity. It's just not acceptable. And at the same time, to hold the reality that if you believe that every single person is created in God's own image, which I do, then the death of any single person is a travesty. And what we're witnessing now is just an extraordinary amount of human suffering. And when I, as a mother and as a Jew and as a human being, read stories about Palestinian mothers feeding their children animal feed and grass to try to keep them alive, I'm absolutely shattered by it. And those two truths, the truth that my family was attacked in these brutal, atrocious acts, and that Palestinians are suffering in a totally horrific way, and that that needs to end, don't actually contradict each other. It's precisely because of my own pain and my own sorrow that my heart and my eyes are open and able to see the sorrow of Palestinian people as well. Ultimately, John, I mean, the only future is a just and shared future for Israelis and Palestinians together. I think the most important thing that people who care about justice can do is amplify and platform and resource the Israelis and Palestinians who are working for that just and shared future right now and help them instead of harming them by creating these kind of false binaries where you win, you lose, you're the victim, you're the villain, and instead say, this is too many people have died. There is too much suffering here. We have to figure out a better way.
Can you talk about what it was like when you were confronted by an ultra-Orthodox leader of the settler movement? What led to that moment, and what happened after?
Yeah, so the whole premise of the book is rooted in this one paradigm. Can I just share this with you?
Please.
So the paradigm that is kind of the central metaphor for the book is this ancient pilgrimage ritual from the time of the Temple Mount. So 2,000 years old, when hundreds of thousands of Jews would make their way up to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and they would enter through this beautiful arched entryway and turn to the right and circle around the perimeter of the courtyard and then exit, like the Hajj. They were just this mass movement of people, except for someone who was brokenhearted, who would turn to the left. And they would have this sacred encounter where the brokenhearted person would be met with someone who would see them in their humanity and in their brokenness and ask them, what happened to you? And that person would say, I am bereft, I am bereaved, I am ill, you know, I'm worried about my kid, I'm lonely. And they would receive a blessing from the person or the people going in this direction. So it's this totally counterinstinctual ritual where what we want to do is pull away, but what we do instead is incline toward each other. And at the end of the book, I share that actually there are two people who turn to the left, not just the brokenhearted, but also the ostracized. And when the ostracized go to the left, they too... These are people who've caused great harm to the community, and they too are received with curiosity and with compassion, even though they've caused grave harm. So some years ago, I was invited by the president of the State of Israel to come be part of a very small group of people, 36 Jews from Israel and around the world, to try to figure out what, if anything, we had in common. And we spent 3 or 4 days together trying to really work through this question. It was fascinating, secular, religious, you know, right wing, left wing. And we found very little that we agreed upon. At the end, he asked me to stand up and speak representing my perspective as an American Jew. And I shared that I was deeply concerned about a lot of the things that I saw unfolding in Israel, including a new violent religious extremism in the Jewish population that I was deeply concerned was going to push us off the edge of the abyss. And afterwards, I was confronted by one of the leaders of the settler movement, ultra-Orthodox, living in the West Bank, in an illegal settlement, and he just cornered me and started shouting at me that, you know, I was lying, this was propaganda, none of this was true, that I was harming the Jewish people by speaking this way, etc. And then he paused for a moment and he said, you know, you really hurt me with what you said about violent religious extremism. And I noticed that his whole demeanor shifted when he said that I hurt him, and mine did too. And so I just turned to him and said, do you want to get lunch? And he said, yeah. And so we literally sat down for lunch together for almost 3 hours in the lobby of the hotel, me, him, and his wife. And we talked and we disagreed about absolutely everything. It was really troubling. And so, you know, as I say, like everything but the sweet kugel, you know, that was the only thing we agreed upon. And I got up and I literally took contemporaneous notes on the whole thing as soon as the meeting was over, because I wanted to remember every word that we had said. And I was deeply troubled by it. I mean, I left troubled. So a couple years pass, and there's this event that happens once a year on the saddest day of the year in Jerusalem, where people go to the Western Wall, there was an egalitarian prayer service there, and a bunch of violent religious extremists were bussed in from the West Bank in order to throw feces and chairs at them, as is their custom. And this guy, it's a true story, I'm sorry to say, I've been there, and this guy, this rabbi, basically stands up and he's like, stop, what are you doing? He said, if any Jew comes here to pray, the only thing you hand them is a prayer book. You know, like you don't throw feces. Like he said, what's wrong with you? And he said, there is a sickness of violent religious extremism and we have to do something to stop it. And so anyway, the only reason I know this whole story is because somebody basically asks his advisors, like, what happened? He's the guy in charge. And then he switched teams. And the guy says, well, he had lunch with Rabbi Sharon Brouse once a couple years ago. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much my lunch with him actually impacted him. But it strikes me the power of, like, when you see someone that's not coming toward you but coming at you and all your defenses are up and all you want to do is pull away, what happens if instead you stay at the table and you just have this uncomfortable conversation in which you try to see each other's humanity. You try to see if there's any overlap. Like I literally realized he cared a lot about his kids and I care a lot about my kids. Like, so I was holding on to that for some time. So what if we force ourselves to stay curious about each other instead of branding someone as a traitor or branding someone as, you know, as a terrorist? Like, what if we actually try to see the humanity in each other? What do we lose? And what could we potentially gain? And most of the time, probably, you know, probably there isn't a happy ending like there is in my story. But sometimes every now and then a seed is planted that grows into something absolutely beautiful and transformative.
So I, when you told that story, I think that it's a beautiful story, but I also was thinking, well, you must have told that story in the years before you had found out that he changed his mind, right? You never told it before. I guess the reason I say that is that his changing his mind makes the conversation you had even more valuable. But what value would it have had? Right. Like the reason his wife is there, yeah, right, is because he wouldn't sit down with a woman.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because of the misogyny of his views about women.
I'm sure he wouldn't want to be seen having lunch alone with a woman. Yeah.
Right. Because you couldn't be just an interlocutor. You had to also that your womanness made it someone you can't. Yeah, he can't sit across from. Right. I guess what I'm getting at is at some like. But forget just feeling safe. When is the right time to say, you know what, we're not speaking anymore. You're someone I need to fight.
Well, this is why I think that model from the ancient ritual is so powerful, because the person, the ostracized person, is one step short of excommunicated, meaning the excommunicated are not welcome into that ritual. But anyone who's short, meaning someone who's going to blow the place up is not welcome into the place because it would render it unsafe. And I think we have to do the work of figuring out the difference between being unsafe and being uncomfortable. And we should not put ourselves in environments where we're unsafe. But we have to put ourselves in environments and conversations where we're uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good to do that. But the only way that we change as people is when we encounter other human beings whose ideas are different from ours, and we end up growing from those encounters. So I think what you're asking is, what's the value of that conversation if it doesn't have the, you know, the Hollywood ending where there's like some Google alert that this guy, you know, changes? Yeah. And so the value of it is, I remain fully human because I am still willing to sit with this guy, even though we totally disagree with each other, even though I think that his views are actually endangering the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And I know he feels that way about me. And even still, I'm willing to see him as a human being who cares about his kids and likes sweet kugel. Right. That is worth it for me, because otherwise I become a caricature of myself when I make him a caricature of himself. And he is actually a human being.
Well, as someone who's become a caricature of himself, I'm not pushing back on it. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm also, I saw you give a talk about this. And what I was thinking when I was watching you speak is, you know, surgeons see opportunities to perform surgery. Rabbis see opportunities to talk about the Talmud and find understanding. That is of a tremendous value. But part of what made the fact that you were sitting down with that rabbi, that ultra-Orthodox pro-settler rabbi interesting is because all around it are all the people fighting, right? But the people fighting are creating, like, those people need to be defeated, right? Like, my view, right, would be that those settlers need to be removed. And actually, more important to me than understanding is the actual tangible outcomes in the world, right? And some people you'll never persuade, and they're not even arguing with you in good faith, right? Like, at what point is it of more value to say, you know what, I'm sick of being curious, and I may be a slightly harder version of myself, but that being a harder version of myself is what it's going to take to get me to the other side of a fight we have to win.
So this is not a panacea. Seeing another person's humanity does not solve problems. It does not take the place of just policy. It doesn't mean that we accept the wrongs that another person is committing in the world or what they stand for or what they believe. It doesn't take the place of it. It actually is bringing humanity into the fight. And so I think it's absolutely essential that we do both, actually. I think we have to continue to fight to see each other's humanity, all while we're fighting the just fight, while we're fighting for a change in policy, for a change in administration, for all the things that we care about in our society, we have to continue to fight for. But when we dehumanize the people who are on the other side of that battle, we're not winning. We're becoming a lot like they are. And so I feel this is really essential for us. I'm not suggesting also that this work is for everyone. Not for everyone all the time, right? So you do what you do.
And I just want to fight.
Right. By the way, I'm fighting too. I mean, we're just fighting in different ways. And, you know, there are people who are like, really, to insist that you can still see the humanity of another person, even when who they vote for and what they stand for and how they live is actually like actually hurts you. That's a spiritual, that is spiritual work. That is very hard work to do. And I think ultimately that's really essential for the kind of social change that we know needs to happen.
I called my dear friend Sarah, who you know, before I came here, and she said, oh, you should make sure you tell Rabbi Brous that Sarah thinks I desperately need the counsel of a rabbi.
I think that's clear to all of us now, John.
Do you have a favorite joke, Jewish humor joke?
Oh my gosh.
I have one to close this out if you want.
Yeah, please.
Two old Jews sitting at a counter. One old Jew says to the other Jew, Morty, are you getting any on the side? And Morty replies, they moved it. Hey, what happens when you die? I'm asking everybody. Mini Driver was honestly pretty fucking useless on the question, but you're a rabbi.
I do believe that the soul survives, John. I'll tell you that.
That's good.
And yeah. I don't think that it's over when it's over. I think that love is stronger than death, and I believe that the soul persists.
Well, that's a good note to leave it on.
I had no applause for that at all.
No, they're ready for it all to be over. Rabbi Sharon Brous, thank you so much. The book is The Amen Effect. Check it out. It's a really good read. We come back. We go down a wiki hole with Darcy Carden.
Don't go anywhere. This is Love It or Leave It, and there's more on the way.
The constant political chaos can be a lot. You got to mix it up with a little regular chaos. Go behind the pods with Terminally Online, Cricket's loosest show, where the news takes a backseat to the unscripted antics of your favorite Pod Save America and Cricket Media hosts and staffers. Here, love it, learning about dating apps.
I was single in my 20s, and then yada, 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 I was single in my 40s.
Listen to my sage advice on being kind to retail workers. Just smile, walk away. You don't have a right to be an asshole. And enjoy Tommy celebrating the unrelenting wheel of time.
Time comes for all of us. You will all be out of touch with the culture. You'll all be asking someone what some equivalent of a yassified means.
Terminally Online is a subscriber-exclusive show. To get access, subscribe to our Friends of the Pod community at cricket.com/friends.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Burrow. You've probably heard about Burrow, a new kind of furniture company known for timeless design, durable materials, and details that make life in your space easier. Last year, they brought their expertise outside with the launch of their outdoor line, and now they're adding more must-have pieces to the collection. Dunes offer seating, dining, and lounger options, while Scout is a new folding chair upholstered in a chic woven fabric made of durable materials for all seasons, weather-resistant teak, stainless alloy, and quick-dry stain-resistant cushions with easy assembly and disassembly. They also just launched a new standing desk, Copilot. With adjustable height, durable scratch-resistant body with built-in storage to make work from home easier than ever. And of course, there's Burrow's seating collections like Nomad and Range, now available in new colors. No matter what you choose, you always get free shipping on every order, which can run up to $100 for larger items. That's a win. It's a win. I love their outdoor stuff. It's great for if you're going to have people over for dinner outside, you want to be entertaining. It's, you know, summer's here. The weather's warming up. Also, they have sofas that have armholes for beverages. That's the best. Pundit's rolling around on a Burrow right now, having a good old time. Love It or Leave It listeners get 15% off their first order at burrow.com/love it. That's burrow.com/love it for 15% off burrow.com/love it. And we're back. Now, Dr. Jenny Yang, I understand that you have one more piece of investigatory archaeology, one more artifact for us.
It reads, shut up, John. I said shut up to you.
Yeah,
shut up, John. This week, Investigation Discovery, add Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, a four-part documentary about former producer Dan Schneider and others allegedly creating an inappropriate and even harmful environment for the child actors on the set of Nickelodeon shows. Now, personally, I loved watching the documentary. Unfortunately, I didn't love the actual video of the character Kat from the Dan Schneider Nickelodeon show Sam and Cat, which I unearthed as part of my research.
Is it possible for a teenage girl to drink water upside down? I'm thirsty!
No more, no more, no more.
Are you fucking...
Jesus!
Are you fucking kidding me? And I know what you're thinking, John. Wow, the 90s were pretty bad, but thank God they are so long ago. I've got some bad news. That actress is Ariana Grande. And this clip is from 2014. So long ago that apparently predates comedy. Because what is the joke in this, John? Huh? Where? Tell me the joke!
I don't know. I cannot believe that that was a Nickelodeon show in 2014. Holy shit! What was going on? Jesus Christ!
All the years prior to, like, 2017 are ancient history, John. And probably all the years since then. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
It's archaeologist.
Thank you.
Dr. Jenny
Thank
Yang.
You. Thank you.
She got a pith helmet on. That's how you know it's legit. You know her, you love her, you're mad she's not currently starring in a network sitcom you can build your entire identity around. It's Darcy Carden. Okay.
Hi. Is this on?
Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
How y'all doing? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great.
What is the most embarrassing thing you've looked up online?
in the world?
Yeah.
probably like Darcy Carden feet, ?
Yeah, just got to see what's out there.
Just
see what's out there.
I want to know what you know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's right. You got to do your own.
Yeah.
You got to do your own research. You got to do your own oppo.
Knowledge is power. Yeah.
And that we've always said that.
Yes.
You played a search engine basically on The Good Place.
Yeah, totally. That's right.
Have you noticed that Google doesn't work anymore?
Is that just true?
Straight up doesn't work anymore.
Wait, like because is it all ads or something?
It's all ads. It's all sponsored. Yes. You can't you search for gym shorts. You don't know what you're gonna get.
You're not getting gym shorts,
no,
hun.
You're getting, but it's like shopping boxes. Yes. And it's not the best.
It's not the best, and it feels very capitalism. It feels very capitalism. Say that. Sorry, I'm trying here, but it does feel like the first five things are like ad sponsored, and you got to scroll past that.
You got to scroll past
even
it.
Even if it's the same website, you got to scroll past it.
You got to add the word Reddit.
Is that right?
You just add the word Reddit, yeah. And then all of a sudden, then you're in business. Yeah. You put whatever you want to know, then yeah. Reddit.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ding.
You just type Darcy Carden alive, Reddit.
Because that'll take you to Reddit?
Yeah, and then there'll be a discussion.
Reddit, I can't believe it's still confusing to me, but it's so confusing to me. I do not feel like it's a very user-friendly interface.
Yeah.
Is it? No. I need to go to like Genius Bar for Reddit.
Yeah.
Or something.
For sure.
Shit.
I'm going to read you a list of terms. Okay. Let me know if you would encourage our listeners to go ahead and search that bad boy, or if you would advise them to not look it up.
Okay.
Blobfish.
Search it. It's funny. It's such a cartoon. It's such a his voice is like Herbert.
No, brother.
Yes, yes, yes. He's either like, wait, how'd you do that? Oh, brother. Or maybe he's like Herbert. He's like, he's on Downton Abbey, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on Downton Abbey.
Yeah, he's on that.
He's in the new Downton Abbey third movie. The third movie, they're like, hey, should we go see Dog Day Afternoon?
Hell,
that's what happens
yeah.
in the third Downton Abbey movie.
That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
Attica. My word, he said Attica.
Attica. Sorry, Minnie. Sorry. What a charming woman. Jesus
charming.
Christ. I'm
charming.
In love with her.
Charisma up the yang.
Oh my God, that laugh.
Charisma up the...
I can barely look at her.
She's
when she comes out here... I gotta close my eyes. She's got it, man.
What about tryptophobia?
Okay, for me, I
fear
would say don't Google it if you have tryptophobia. My best friend Jen Statsky has it bad, so I'm always like, don't look at this. Yeah, this is pretty rough.
This is when like you have a fear of little holes.
Little holes. Now I think it's beautiful. It's kind of like mm-hmm. honeycombs can do that.
I don't like that.
But here's what. Okay, actually, I'm gonna take it back. Do not Google it, because what happens when you Google tryptophobia is it isn't this beautiful like plant. It's like people's heels of their feet and the palms of their hands that are like riddled with disease. I've done it. Do you know what I'm saying? Can you picture that? It's like skin holes and it's really bad.
Mm,
so
no,
don't
thank
do it.
You.
Just learn.
No,
look up
you.
The definition and know what it is, but don't look at the pictures.
Then there's this famous waterfall in the Antarctic, which has high iron oxide, making it look like the Antarctica has its period.
Google it.
Google
yeah,
it.
It's great.
I think it's great.
Yes, say it, look at me in the eye. It's great.
It's great.
It's great to look at a period.
It's great to look at a period.
There's no reason not
There's
to look
no
at
reason
it.
To not look at
I'll
it.
I'll Google that every day
I'll
of my
Google
life.
It every day of my
until
life.
Until I die.
Until the day I fucking die.
Thank you.
Darcy?
Yeah. What?
It's time to play one of our favorite Love It or Leave It games.
Ooh.
It's called Was I in This?
Okay.
You and I will ask the audience, was Darcy in this show or film? You, the audience, will volunteer to answer the question, do we have any Darcy heads in the crowd?
Gay, mommy. My mom's here.
Kendra's head. Your mom's here?
No, but just one person said woo.
Oh.
And my mom loves me.
Oh, that's nice. Kendra's out there. Can we bring up the lights, please? Thank you.
Thank
Would
you,
anybody
Darcy.
Like to play Was I in This? Raise no. your hand, you cowardly freaks.
I see one hand.
Hey.
Yay, welcome.
Oh, that was nicer than what I did.
Oh, yeah. You cowardly freaks.
Hi, what's your name?
Rose.
Hi, Rose. Great name.
Hi.
The beautiful name.
Beautiful
Thank
name.
You.
As beautiful as a daffodil.
Rose, are you ready to play Was I in This with Darcy?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. Hi, Rose.
Darcy, kick us off.
So is this like true or false, basically?
Yeah.
Okay. I played Janet on NBC's The Good Place.
True.
Darcy played the neighbor in A24's Dicks.
Yeah, let the ding happen or not.
You're right. You're right. I just... Otherwise, well, let's maybe the dings could happen like sort of faster. In a timely fashion. That's on me. That's on me. There was a lifetime before I started speaking.
He jumped again. Okay.
Darcy played the neighbor in A24's Dicks the Musical.
False.
No, it's true.
Check it out. Anyone seen Dicks the Musical? I highly recommend it.
Highly
recommend.
It's very funny.
Right now.
It's on Max. It used to be called HBO, but they were like, nah, too good of a brand. They're like, get that off of there. Yuck. It's That's associated right. with premium and amazing shit. Get it off of the fucking thing.
This is true. Max used to be called HBO, and Dicks used to be called fucking identical twins. They had to change the name.
They changed the name. Yeah. That changed the name.
Yeah, because of the F word, I think.
Yeah, and the implications.
Well, you got to watch the movie to see if that's true or not.
I once performed a wedding for two gay guys.
Go on.
And they were both Eagle Scouts, and so I said, and they were very. They had
as
a lot
adults?
In common. No. As
okay.
children, they weren't. Well, I think it's sort of like a. Okay. You always
you're
have been.
Once,
you're always an Eagle
once
Scout.
An Eagle. Once,
right. You are an Eagle Scout.
One, okay.
And I said, they have so much in common. They're like brothers with benefits. And
didn't go
I shouldn't have done
they
it.
They hated that. They absolutely hated
it
that.
It was a miss. It was a miss.
They absolutely hated it. Okay, my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. I appeared as Patricia in Why Did I Get Married 2?
I didn't see that. False?
False is correct. That was the singer, dancer, and superstar Janet Jackson.
Oh. Darcy portrayed Natalie on HBO's Barry.
True.
Ding. Yes, that's right. Sorry. I played Ms. Witt in Bad Girls from Valley High.
Statistically, I'm just going to go false.
Nice. False. Wow. That was Psycho star Janet Leigh.
Oh.
You see where this is going?
Oh. Darcy appeared as Greta Gill in A League of Their Own.
True.
Yeah.
That is true.
Gone too soon. Quiet. They're screaming. They're editing out the screaming. When you listen to this back, just know the
chance
crowd,
of gone too
guys,
soon deafening.
Quiet.
Too loud.
My ears. Okay. My turn? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I played Skunk in The Gutter.
I'm going to go false.
True. Now, this is a trick question because it's not out yet, but it did just premiere at South by Southwest to rave reviews.
You played Skunk in The Gutter.
I played a character named Skunk in a movie called The Gutter.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Okay, your turn. No, me. Oh, God, I have to say this one?
Yeah.
I played Linda in the short film I Know You Think I Farted.
False.
True.
But hey, what do you think it's about?
It's a short film. They
sounds
get right
funny.
Down to it. It was
it
funny.
Sounds funny.
Written by Emily Strawn, just so you know. For Funny or Die. Remember
did
that?
You,
right,
yeah,
remember
did,
that place?
Did you fart or did someone else fart?
You know, I didn't fart. And also, I have to actually say something, guys. You know how... Wait, let's just make sure I'm not like giving away... Whatever, I don't care. You know how I play Bad Janet on The Good Place?
Yes.
And Bad Janet's whole thing is farting? I don't like that. I'm actually not like a huge fart joke fan.
Oh.
And I'm also going to tell you one more thing. The first time Bad Janet farts, I made the sound with my mouth, kind of like a like she's just being like sassy, but then they put a fart sound over it and I do stick my butt out so it does look like I fart and the audiences seem to like it so they just kept putting farts in. So then I became the actress that farts all the time.
Wow. Yeah. That's sort of like how you need like a nudity writer. You need a writer that says you cannot make it look like I farted
totally.
Without my express consent.
Yes, that's what I was picketing about.
It is 2024. Yeah. Right. That's what the strike was all about.
Exactly.
People don't realize that, but that's one of the many things the strike was about.
Yeah.
They can't just make you fart.
No, Mike, sure.
Think about then, by the way, then they can go back and make other people fart.
Say that.
Yeah. Yeah, now they're farting. Now all kinds of people are farting.
Everybody's farting.
I am Spartacus. Fart.
Attica.
Fart. Hey, this whole town is corrupt.
Fart.
I'm that other movie.
Yeah.
Scarface. Nope, the other one. Serpico.
Fart. Terrible. They're going to ruin cinema. They.
I got to they.
They are.
They are going to ruin cinema with these farts. Although I have to tell you, Serpico could use some jokes. That thing is fucking heavy. And honestly, we can say it now. Boring. Okay.
I didn't say it. All right, your turn.
Oh. Darcy appeared as Justice in the John Singleton film Poetic Justice.
Sure.
No.
Think about it for a second. Just think about it
for one fucking second.
Rose, no. Got this, Rose.
Come on, Rose. Come on, she didn't exactly rose to the occasion. I'm sorry, Rose.
Okay, that's false.
It was Janet Jackson again.
Yeah, and also check that movie out. It's great. Tupac.
Getting a lot of good.
What?
Getting a lot of good ideas. For
you are.
To watch.
You are. Rose, I appeared in the Glenn Close. Okay, this word's hard for me. Biopic.
Yeah.
It's a bio.
Biographical picture.
Right. But don't people say biopic?
Yeah, but people say a lot of stuff these days.
I appeared in the Glenn Close biopic, Albert Nobbs.
I think no, because he didn't know how to say biopic.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Rose fighting back from downtown. Look at Rose. Rose doesn't take any shit.
I got roasted.
Rose has some thorns. Yours was good.
No, yours was
but
really
they didn't
good.
Hear mine.
Oh,
they
okay,
didn't
hear
wait, mine.
Do it again.
Rose has some thorns.
Gone too soon.
Gone too soon. Shut up, Chris. All right.
Okay. Your turn.
Oh, Darcy voiced the Turkish ambassador in History of the World Part 2.
True.
That is true.
I'm Turkish. So
oh.
Yeah, I am.
Cool.
Yeah, oh. He went, oh.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm a little bit Turkish and a little bit Greek. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
Rare.
Ah.
A rare gem.
Acropolis. Istanbul.
Love that place.
Two
okay.
places.
I played Gemma on Broad City.
Yes, this is the one I've been waiting for. True.
Oh, well, great. Great. Yes. Check out Broad City on, I don't know where you can find it these days.
Hulu.
Okay, great. Peacock. Hulu. Great.
Those are different.
Yeah.
Just two confident things said out loud by people that do not know. That's what's going on. That's the internet. Darcy played Nell McAdoo in Cricket's very own Edith podcast about First Lady Edith Wilson.
True.
That is true.
Travis Howick.
Bam, bam, bam.
I played the character Denise in Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps.
Come on, you got this. Rose.
False.
Nice. False, Rose.
Once again, that was Janet Jackson.
It was Janet Jackson.
Miss Janet, if you're nasty, obviously.
Miss Janet, if you're nasty.
Oh, wait. Too soon. Okay. Wait, that's actually your line, so I will do this.
Everybody, check out WikiHole.
Yeah.
With Darcy Carden.
Wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast. They go down a WikiHole.
Yeah, you're going to come on my show.
I am?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. We come back. We're doing, what's this thing called? Something about daylight saving time. It's going to be great. And we're back. Before we get to the daylight saving wheel, a new episode of Friends of the Pod's exclusive show, Polar Coaster, dropped this week. On it, Dan Pfeiffer answers questions from listeners like, will the State of the Union affect Biden's polls? Will Trump's convictions actually impact him? And does the law of cause and effect even exist anymore? The answer is sometimes. Then he interviewed an expert about the youth vote and whether Biden can reach that demographic despite being very, very far from it himself. Interested in listening? Go to cricket.com/friends to sign up right now. Also, next week, the Supreme Court will hear opening arguments over the right to access abortion pills. If you think that's fucked, that 5 out of 9 justices will decide the future of abortion freedom, don't have the anatomy in question, you can support nationwide abortion freedom and show them where they can stick their gavels while you're at it. Pick up any item from Crooked's No Trespassing collection, and a portion of the proceeds will go to Vote Save America's Fuck Bans Fund, which currently supports abortion rights organizations across Arizona, Nevada, and Florida. Head to crooked.com/store right now. And now for a segment we're calling Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun.
Nice. That's the most we're allowed to play of it. Please welcome Minnie and Jenny back to the stage.
Sorry.
Hi.
This is my real voice. I know. I was very convincing.
Jenny, no longer a doctor.
It was actually really cute to watch you do the British accent backstage because Minnie would be like,
aww.
Yes.
How'd you do? Mini
she
driver?
Did great.
Yeah.
You're the most supportive.
You did great.
There was some coaching beforehand.
There
I gotta call it out.
Yes. It was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Love.
Oh, man. John. Do you think that it is harder for British people to do an American accent or for Americans to do a British accent?
Oh. Americans to do a British accent.
Right?
I will tell you.
Mm. Well, it's what I was told at school anyway, at drama school. Because it's easier to relax because you have a very, like, you have a very kind of tight tongue.
Hard R.
Hard R.
Yeah.
It's just harder to do in English. It's harder to sound like you've got a stick up your ass.
I thought it was, someone told me once that when you want to do an American accent, you make your mouth real wide, but when you want to do a British accent, you kind of make it speaking through a keyhole.
It's a lot more.
Keyhole, just a keyhole.
Keyhole.
Can I offer another theory?
Yeah.
My theory is that because of the popularity and of Hollywood cultural supremacy, there's more of a exposure to American accents worldwide. No?
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, it's more of a wallpaper of your life. And so maybe it's easier.
A long time, the map was pink.
What? What does that mean?
It means that the British Empire, was like literally everywhere. Like there were no other countries.
That's how they got all those cool vases.
You're right. That's true.
It's true.
That's true.
Yeah. And if you go, the Ashmolean has that one last dodo.
Yikes.
And you know, that was a miss.
Don't even talk about the British Museum and did somebody just go, ugh. All the shit we haven't returned.
Minnie Driver, why won't you personally give this stuff back? Minnie Driver, give it back.
Literally. Also, thanks for having a go at me for not knowing what happens when we die. Like you know. Like, Christ.
Minnie was in the back, like, I can't believe I said lights out.
Because I don't think that. Listen, I think it depends what you did in this life.
Right.
Oh. And after treating me so cruelly, I know what's happening to you.
Lights out.
It's going to be lights out for him. Lights out for him.
Lights out.
Words.
Lights
food.
Out. Lights out. Can't wait. All right.
You're so tired.
I'm sorry. I'm exhausted. And I'm sick of looking at my phone. Do you think there are phones in heaven?
No.
Good.
No.
Oh, God, no.
All right. Well, that's a relief. What is there a wheel for this? I can't remember. Yeah, hell yeah.
How cute.
Oh. What is this for again?
It's what you would do with an extra hour.
That's right.
Every night.
That is such a good picture of you.
Oh, you look so handsome.
Wow, that is a good picture of me.
It's a strong jaw. It's a good teeth.
Really good.
Yeah. What do you want?
Okay,
what's
so what do you do? What do you say?
What would you do? We turn the tables on you.
What would you do with this extra hour?
This extra hour of daylight?
Okay.
You know what I would like to do? I would like to be outside for 1 hour a day.
Oh,
you
God.
Know what I mean? Because here's the thing. I walk the dog in the morning, and then I walk the dog at night. Yeah. But that's not enough.
I mean, that's good.
Is that the only time you go outside? That's dreadful.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Really?
Well, I don't really like putting on sunscreen, so then I don't want to go out really between 10 and 2.
You've got a hat right there.
Could you be a hat? Could you be a...
There you go. You have great windows in your house.
Yeah. Mm. Getting some D. Vitamin.
Still.
Getting some D vitamin.
I'm sorry. I could
nice
see.
Nice almost catch.
D, comma, vitamin. I could see you in a gorgeous sun hat.
Oh, yes.
I really could.
You know when I'll know that my life is really firing on all cylinders?
Okay.
When I finally no longer have an over 200 day streak on the New York Times crossword.
Oh yeah.
Because because the day I forget to do it is the day I'm happy.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
you
totally,
know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Because I have not missed that in 250 days.
Right, right, right.
And here's the thing, Monday through Wednesday, that's 5 to 10 minutes. Thursday through Sunday,
exactly.
That's 30 to 45 to an hour of my life. Every day for 250 days in a row.
Have you been depressed?
Really?
Yeah, what? It's true.
Have you been depressed?
I didn't think I was.
Okay.
Let's spin it again.
Whee!
Oh, dear.
It's landed on Jenny. What are you going to do with an extra hour a day?
J-Y.
Okay. I did think about this on my drive here.
Shit.
And it's a little like big picture, small picture. Okay, so... I don't know about you and your pandemic experience. I was very sad sack. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. I was one of the people that loved it.
And, you know, it was very internal. I got off social media. The world is angsty, right? And then only I feel like this past year, especially with Daylight Savings, with this extra hour, I decided the fire within is burning and it is coming out. I now have enemies. Do you know what I mean? I used to not have enemies. Like now I have enemies. I want to thrive in order to passive aggressively show them. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. This is what I decided. Like I flipped a frame of mind and I think I want that hour to do that. You know what I mean? To just thrive
an hour for vengeance.
That my enemies.
An hour a day.
An hour for vengeance.
Yes. Yes, because I'm not naturally like this.
Right. Did you not?
I don't think like this. But there's something in me that just turned after the pandemic.
Yeah.
That was just like, I will now designate enemies and I will have that secretly drive me in order to succeed and thrive and be happy.
Holy shit, I don't want to be your enemy.
I know.
I think you need to talk to the rabbi.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I need to go through that practice of being like, what's wrong with you? So many things. I don't know.
I don't know, I think that was good. I think that's a really good thing
vulnerable.
To do. Make a list, check it twice.
It's vengeance in a passive aggressive way. Do you know what I mean? It's more like okay, if they've rejected me, I'm gonna like thrive out of spite.
Okay, and that's good. It's not like you're not gonna like do something to
no,
them.
You're not cutting tires.
I would support you if you did.
I don't think that's very good for you. Right. I think it will make you feel sad ultimately.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel motivated.
What's that saying? Spite is a poison you drink yourself to kill someone
right.
else.
That's right. And expect the other person to die.
I thought that was jealousy. I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying to think of it in a positive way. I'm just giving him enough oomph to just motivate me to be creative and do things.
I love that. Whatever puts wind in your sails.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's spin it again.
Thank you.
Yes. Min.
Yes.
It has landed on Minnie.
Yeah, you'll sort of groan and be annoyed, but like, I'd drink an extra cup of coffee and I'd go surfing.
Nice.
Wow, that's such a good answer.
Really? Are you clapping?
That's
God,
good.
Everybody's wow. thrilled by that.
For an hour? Doesn't get applause?
You know what that did?
What?
You, in one sentence, drink a cup of coffee and go surfing, painted a beautiful life.
I know.
It's a painting.
Everybody gasped. It took our breath away.
Clapped.
Yes, that was amazing. I drink an extra.
Do you surf?
Yes.
Wow.
Not well. Like you can't possibly surf well unless you started when you were tiny.
Right.
But I do. I surf a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you not figured out that Minnie Driver is one of the coolest chicks in the world?
That is
yeah.
True.
No. Yeah. That's evident.
Yeah.
So have you ever done the thing where there's a wave above you? You know, like when they're like going down what looks like they're like inside
a
of
tunnel,
a wave, like
right.
a tunnel of wave.
When you're in a tube. No, I've never been in a tube.
Tube.
Oh, that's called a tube.
Yes.
Tube.
I've
not
never
the subway.
We call it the subway.
Right. Who got it first? Good
on. Jenny had it first.
Good
Jenny had it first.
Jenny had it first. Jenny had it first, but you were waiting for, you were giving it a breath.
I know.
It's tough when there's funny people on stage. Oh my God.
Oh my God. It's
no, me first.
Oh yeah, I said it.
No, me first.
I was, yeah. We call it.
Are you laughing at mine?
You're the host. You have all the power. It's fine.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good.
That's so good.
That's good.
You ever hang 10?
Oh, have you?
Toes? No, because that's both feet on the end. No, absolutely not.
Right?
I'm literally just figuring out cross-stepping. It's really hard.
How long have you been surfing?
Like, I should be way better than I am. Like 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen a big scary shark or whale or dolphin?
I have, yeah, cool. In Fiji not this Christmas, but the Christmas before. It was a big tiger shark in the face of the wave. But the cool thing about seeing a shark, right, is first of all, we were in his backyard. But second of all, if you're seeing him, like, he's not biting you.
Right.
So that's good.
If you're feeling
that's how I spun it anyway. I was like, if I'm seeing him in the face of the wave, the dude's cruising. He's not biting me.
So be grateful.
But I was very scared.
Cool. I was absolutely terrified. I'm always curious about in the moment. I always feel like if I was out in the ocean and I saw a shark, I would have a heart attack. I think I'd have a heart attack.
We had to get back to the boat, so there was no...
Yeah.
I did do something. I made up a technology. I was with my two girlfriends, and I was like, I wonder if we make ourselves look big like you're supposed to do when you, like, see a bear.
Yeah.
So we all got together, and our friend was in the middle, and then me and my friend Cameron were the only ones who were going to lose an arm on each side. So we tried to be, anyway.
Did you invent something, or did you just do what zebras do?
Is that what they do?
Well, they just, is it, that's why they got
when
the stripes.
When do zebras see sharks?
Well, I'm just saying that it's like, is it one zebra? It's like when they're running together, it's like, where's one zebra end and another zebra begin? Is it one giant zebra?
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm
honestly
saying?
I believe this nature fact from you because you're wearing that hat.
It's true.
Very convincing.
I'm glad a shark didn't eat you. What about jellyfish? You ever get stung by a jellyfish while surfing?
Nope.
Oh, also, that's great.
I have been stung by one, but not surfing.
Okay.
We've got a wetsuit on as well, so it's hard.
Was it hard to say zebra and not zebra?
Did I just say zebra?
You said zebra.
I have lived in America for 27 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
It's astonishing I still sound like this. I give a very short shrift. Do you know what that means?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, you'll get it. I give a very short shrift to people who've lived here for a short amount of time who are English, who sound American.
What does Madonna sound like to you?
Haven't heard her talk in a long time.
It's kind of gone. It's not.
Is it back? Is it back? It's settled down.
Back to Detroit or whatever. Yeah.
But there are certain people that I'm not here to throw names around, but it really does make me annoyed.
It gives you a very short shrift.
Yes.
I give a very short shrift.
So it's British people who sound more American very quickly.
Yeah, people who've been here for 3 years and they're like, how are you? It's so great to see you. Oh my God. I don't miss London at all. And I'm like,
First of all.
Name names.
Yeah, I know.
The performance we just got. Incredible.
I'm telling ya.
One thing, I've noticed that when I've had friends that have lived in the UK, they may not pick up the accent, but they pick up the cadence specifically on questions.
Yes,
and all of a sudden you'll have a friend who'll say, should we go to the store? I'm like, hold on a second. Should we go to the store? Should we go to the store?
Should we go to the store?
What are we doing here?
Yeah. Should we go to the store?
Should we go
to the shops?
I like it.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that's good.
Let's spin it again.
Who could it be, I wonder?
This is so random. Oh, dear. Is it a poodle?
Oh, no, kind of. Okay.
Darcy?
Ask me the question.
What would you do with an extra hour of daylight?
Okay.
What will you do
with
it?
I think it would have to do with keeping in better touch with family, not through text.
Ooh.
Wow.
Okay. So, I think what I've realized as throughout COVID and throughout aging beautifully is just kidding, is how quickly so much time can pass where you haven't talked to people that you love so very much. You talk to the people in your life every day that you are in proximity to, close proximity. But like my best friend who lives in the Bay Area, we can all of a sudden go for a year or go for 6 months or whatever it is. And that starts making me feel really bad about life and my life. And, I don't just mean sort of like checking off the list of like, oh, who haven't I talked to? But the people that like bring you love and joy and people that you want in your life, just maybe, I guess it's fucking phone calls. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's so hard.
I think you
Wait,
should.
Wait, why are phone calls bad?
I don't know.
I don't think they are. And here's my thing. I am like, I call.
You just call.
I call.
Yeah,
I call everybody.
Just do it.
I call.
Yeah. Nobody answers me then.
They really? Don't answer, call, but then
no
you call again.
Yeah.
And they say, is everything
exactly.
okay?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I'm like, just check it in, buddy.
So
oh,
smart.
I thought
Correct.
Something was wrong.
Yes.
Nope, nothing's wrong
so
except
smart.
Something about the way I am. But other than that.
Just want to talk about me
other than
for
that,
a second.
How's everything going?
That's great.
This
that's
is a check-in. Yeah, that's right. I'm driving somewhere.
Yeah.
I got time in the car.
Yes.
I have time in the car.
I have 30 minutes before I get to my appointment. So how are you?
Totally.
The best is also when you have a deep and good catch up with someone until you hear the sounds of a car ride ending.
Yes.
You hear like the sounds of like click, click, click. They're blinking. They're turning in. Yes. They're parking. There's a ding. There's a traffic ticket. There's a parking slip.
Yes.
And they're like, it's been so good catching up. Well, it's like, I'm sorry. If this ride was 10 minutes shorter or 10 minutes longer, our relationship is exactly as long as this car ride, not a second longer. Damn. You would sit in the car to hear the end of a murder podcast. Yes. But you want to get off the phone because you're home now?
Yeah.
What the fuck is this? What is any of it?
Things have gotten bad.
I would like to say that here is what I want to do with an extra hour of daylight.
Okay, you already said it, but
I want to put I want to put my phone in the house and I want to go outside and I want to be unreachable in the world, nothing in my ears, nothing on my eyeballs except the universe for 1 hour.
1 hour
I could do that. I could do that.
Have you ever?
No.
Come surfing with me.
Yes, no,
every week my therapist says, did you do your 10 minutes of stillness a day? And I say, obviously I didn't. Look at me. Look at how I am. No, I didn't do 10 minutes of stillness a day.
John, what if you did a 30-minute phone-free walk and you did it tomorrow?
That feels doable.
Can I text you?
Really uncomfortable. It's
like, okay, I'll do it.
Yay!
And that's this segment. Here comes the sun.
You'll get it, Nadir.
And when we come back, we'll end on a high note. And we're back. Here it is, the high note.
Hi, Love It or Leave It. This is Liz in Canada. And my high note is that 6 months ago, I moved from a very liberal province to Alberta, which is Canada's most conservative province. And I've never been politically active other than voting. But now that I'm in Alberta and seeing the absolutely wild policies that our premier is enacting, including some transphobic ones, I decided that I need to get involved. So this week, I officially became a member of the New Democratic Party, the NDP, Alberta's left party. And I'm going to volunteer and donate and do everything that I can to bring them back to power in our province. And I never would have done this if it wasn't for Crooked Media, Pods of America, and Love It or Leave It, and the inspiring work that you all do. So while I can't help Joe Biden get reelected, I will do everything I can to get liberal politicians elected up here in Canada. Thanks so much.
Hi, Love It. This is Tracy in New York City. I saw you live at Radio City Music Hall, and I also saw you live in Amsterdam in the Netherlands when I lived there. My high note relates to the high note of Megan, who called in from San Diego on the January 27th show. Her friend had COVID and then later had an unexplained paralysis. My son actually had something very similar, and it took a lot of research to get him to the right healthcare providers. But I'm very happy to say that he slowly but surely was able to walk again and was even skiing, and he's doing much better. If you Google functional neurological disorder, which is what he was diagnosed with, you'll end up on a website called FND Hope, which is really useful. And anybody who's interested can reach out to me. I have a very weird half-Dutch hyphenated last name, so I'm easy to find on social media. It's Kay Denton, K-E-I-J-Denton, like Denton, Texas. Thank you for all that you do.
Thanks to everybody who sent in a high note tonight. If you want to send us a message about something that gave you hope, send us a voice memo to loli highnotes@gmail.com. Or if you're a Friend of the Pod subscriber, you can send us your high note through the Friend of the Pod Discord. That is our show.
Oh, wow.
Thank you to the incredible Mini Driver, Jenny Yang, Darcy Carden, Rabbi Sharon Brouse. There are 226 days until the 2024 elections. Have a great night and have a great weekend.
Bye.
If you're already doom scrolling, don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find Love It or Leave It on YouTube for access to your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Finally, you can join our Friends of the Pod subscription community for ad-free episodes, exclusive content, and a great discussion on Discord. Plus, it's a great way to get involved with Vote Save America, so sign up today at crooked.com/friends. Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It is written and produced by me, John Lovett, and Lee Eisenberg. Kendra James is our executive producer, and Chris Lord is our producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus, Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, Will Miles, and Mohamed El-Sheikhi are our writers. Evan Sutton is our editor. Kyle Steglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer, and Milo Kim is our videographer. Our theme song is written and performed by Shore Shore. Thanks to our designer, Bernardo Serna, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast, and to our digital producers, Zuri Irvin, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroat, for filming and editing video each week so you can.